welcome to Lie, Cheat, and Steal. This episode is a little break from our usual programming. Don't worry, it's an addition to, not a replacement for, your next free episode. But we recorded this episode for our Patreon subscribers back in 2020, and we just thought it would be really good to release now because it is about noted serial con artist grifter Sean King. So when we recorded this episode back in 2020, it was sort of the height of the George Floyd protests and the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement. And at that time, Sean King was kind of trying to become the preeminent voice of that movement. So we thought we should just let people know, you know, not to trust this guy. Unfortunately, he is back right now. He's basically running the same game for the pro-Palestine movement. So again, we just thought it would be good for people to have a little resource to learn about this guy and what he might be up to. It's not up to date with all of his most recent antics from the last couple years, but it at least can serve as a good primer for why you maybe shouldn't listen to this guy. So hope you enjoy. We'll be back with a new episode very soon.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Lie, Cheat, and Steal, the podcast about liars, frauds, thieves, and bullshitters. I'm your host, Pat Royce. With me, as always, my co-host, Kath Barbadoro. Kath, how you doing?
Pat, I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good here in Austin, Texas. It's hot as heck, and that's about it.
It's hot as shit, and also like very scary outside. So yeah. Please do not go.
Yeah. No. I'm hunkered down, camping out, and just enjoying not being outside today. That's for sure.
Hell yeah.
You've made a location switch, right, Kath? You're back.
I have. Yeah, I came back to New York earlier this week. I was at my parents' house for 3 months, and look, I love my parents very much. I am very lucky. It was a very like drama-free visit, but I am very glad to be in my own space again. Holy shit, I'm so glad to be away from them.
So
New York City is definitely weird, but it's also not my parents' house, so like big bonus points for that.
Yeah, that is something like an insane thing to think about. Like it's at this point, like oh, I have to spend 3 months in my mom's house. Oof, yeah, that would be. That'd be something, but
they were like very understanding about it. Cause like, I remember like at one point I was trying to like explain something to my mom of just like, you know, like I'm really grateful to be here and you know, you guys have been great, but like, I really need to like have my own space and everything. And my mom just cut me off and went, yeah, you're 32 and you live in your childhood. I was like, okay, yeah, thank you. Exactly. I'm 32 years old. Like, yes, I would like to leave.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Those times when you make it like my mom doesn't live in the house that I grew up in anymore, but up until pretty recently she did. And every now and then you just find yourself back there, like in that bed, you're like, what is going on?
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't lived there for that long since I was in high school. Yeah. Like when I went away to college, I didn't come back for summers. Like that was the first time I'd been there for that long in like 15 years. Yeah. It was really weird.
Yeah. When I moved back,
made it.
Yeah. When I moved back from Texas, I stayed at my mom's house. Cause I was just back in Texas. It's like from Connecticut for 3 years. And I was like, oh, cool. So I went up to my mom's house for like the weekend to see all my old friends. I was up there for like 2 months living at her old place. I was like, all right, time to get back to Austin.
Yeah. It's time to go.
Yeah. Anyways. So that's what's been going on. Kath, we're going to try, I think we're taking the second stab at this one today, right?
Yeah, so thank you all for bearing with us with some very frustrating technical issues. Hopefully they are in the past. Hopefully you're hearing this episode.
Yeah.
Knock on wood. We'll see what happens. But we recorded this a couple weeks ago, and I was really excited for it to go out on the Patreon, and then disaster struck and we lost some of the audio, but hopefully it was long enough ago and Pat and I smoke enough weed that it'll sound fresh.
Yeah. I Googled this guy today and I was like, who? This guy sounds crazy.
Perfect. Exactly. Yeah, that's what we want. So today we're talking about Sean King, who prior to doing this before this episode, what did you think about this guy, Sean King?
I
you knew who he was.
I knew who he was. I had never I'd heard him criticized on both sides of the aisle, like in the work truck and the comedy table, you know. And but for, it seemed like for different reasons. I wasn't quite sure how big the actual like ethnic background played into his things. I knew some people said he was a fake. Some people said I wasn't quite clear on that. But yeah, there's some things I didn't know about or even know how important they were to the discussion of Sean King.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up. So just for some grounding for our listeners, if anybody doesn't know who he is, Sean King is, he's a writer, he's a civil rights activist. He is mainly known for using social media to kind of spread information about social justice causes, particularly Black Lives Matter. He kind of initially made a name for himself on social media during the Ferguson uprising after Michael Brown was murdered. He's recently come to the fore again because he was one of the main people who drove sort of awareness toward the Ahmaud Arbery situation, where there was this video of this guy being executed and the people hadn't been prosecuted. So, like, that's kind of how he's known. And so, like, I mean, if you listen to this podcast, you know where we stand. Like, those are good things. Like, yeah, we're not like that we are totally like pro Black Lives Matter and all of that stuff, and like that in itself is not the problem, but that's kind of the issue, is that's what he's known for, but there's a lot of other kind of shady shit going on with him.
Yeah, as with any social movement, with any movement whatsoever, you're gonna catch some people in there who you know, who wind up being good fodder for one of our episodes, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's anywhere where there is a lot of attention and focus, and particularly many small donations, you're going to find people who try to capitalize on that stuff. So but I'm glad you brought up the ethnic background thing, because that is something that he gets criticized for from the right. I mean, obviously, because he's a Black Lives Matter person, he's going to get criticized by conservatives regardless. And so one of the things about him that sort of drove people to look into whether or not he was legit is that he was accused of not being actually Black.
Yeah.
I think it was, I want to say it was like Tucker Carlson or somebody like that. I can see if I can.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was Mr. Carlson. Yeah.
It was some like weird. Oh, okay. Yeah. It was Milo. That's who it was.
Milo? Yeah. I remember Milo.
RIP probably, like whatever the fuck that guy's doing. Rest in piss, you asshole.
I love how that dude is a burden to like three or four people right now. Just like there's a network of like three to four, perhaps five people taking care of Milo, and he's just like ruining all their lives. And I think that's pretty tight.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He is overstaying his welcome somewhere. As we speak. No question. But yeah, apparently Milo is the one who brought that up. So Milo said that his birth certificate said that his father was a white man, and he always claimed that he was mixed race. He had a white mother and a Black father.
Yeah.
However, like, I think this was pretty clearly addressed, which is basically Sean was like, the guy on my birth certificate raised me, but is not my biological father. My mother, you know, told me from birth that my father was a Black man. And like people from Sean King's past before he became this like civil rights person say, yeah, he always identified as mixed race. Like, this is not like a new grift. If he's lying about this, he's been lying about it since he was a child. It's not, it wouldn't make any sense if he were lying about this. So like, yeah. So there is that question about his ethnic background, but I think that's relatively settled. And in this episode, we're not really going to touch on that, because it's like there are a lot of other reasons why he's shady that don't have to do with his race.
Yeah, exactly. I had always heard that from like from like the right, and like it was a loud enough thing they brought up that I was like, is there some kind of truth to that? And then because I don't do any research whatsoever, so I was like, I just didn't know. So that's good to know. That seems like I could see that being where that came from.
And I remember sort of half hearing that and never kind of looking into it before I started doing this. So like, but yeah, I mean, that explanation like makes sense to me, so I was just like, okay. But yeah, so he, I'm sorry, I said he went to Howard. He went to Morehouse. That's what I meant.
Okay.
Morehouse. Morehouse is where MLK went. It's in Atlanta. It's Lemens. It's a, yeah, it's like a very prestigious school.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, he, if you've heard of him, you've probably heard of him through Twitter, where he raises awareness for all of these causes, but he's spun his sort of social media profile into a lot of other things. So he was a writer in residence at Harvard Law School's Fair Punishment Project. He contributes to a lot of news outlets. He's written for The Intercept. He's been on The Young Turks, like a lot of sort of hallmarks of like progressive media he has been involved in some way. And then he's also very well known for being, he was a Bernie Sanders surrogate in 2016 and 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
So like he's basically made a career of doing this stuff. Unfortunately, not all of it has been on the up and up.
Yes.
So most of what I'm going to be talking about today is from a Daily Beast article from this past May. It focuses on his most recent project, which of which he has had many, which we'll go into. But his most recent project was to relaunch Frederick Douglass's paper, The North Star, which is like a hugely historically important abolitionist newspaper. You know,
yeah,
like that's
yeah.
like why that's why we know who Frederick Douglass is, pretty
yeah.
much, is because like he did this kind of stuff. So, like, big shoes to fill. To be like, we're relaunching the North Star.
Yeah, right? That is a, yeah, it's a lofty goal. Okay. Sean.
Yeah. extremely lofty goal. But that's what he was going to do. He partnered with this guy, Benjamin Dixon, who's another black progressive, like, Bernie Sanders surrogate guy who I really like. I think Benjamin Dixon is he's legit. Like
yeah.
I feel bad for him that he got sucked into this like web of, of insanity. Cause like I think he's pretty good. But so they sort of co-partnered to relaunch the North Star. This was like at the beginning of 2019. And they did like a big crowdfunding thing for it. And they said, you know, they had multiple angel investors. They had a subscription model where it was like $5 a month for students and $10 a month for everybody else. And they said they had like over 30,000 subscribers. Some of the people giving at the highest levels were very well-known people. Like you had Sigourney Weaver, Brene
yeah.
Brown. There was this black billionaire philanthropist named Robert Smith who was giving $10,000 a month.
Jesus.
So they were like doing really well. Like
yeah,
they had,
yeah.
they were really well funded at first. Like there were a lot of people behind this project financially and like high profile people who wanted this.
Man, that's so tight. And so it went well, right? Everything went great. Like,
yep, it went great. And that's the end of the episode. We just wanted to let you know.
Yeah. Shout out Sean King, baby. Did it again.
Yeah, just another success
yeah.
in a line of successes.
Let's mark another W up for our boy Sean. Just always winning.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is not that is not the case.
No. Okay.
Ah, nuts.
Yeah. Right.
The Daily Beast article says, 14 months after launching, almost none of what King promised to build has appeared, and the site has struggled with issues that alienated many subscribers. The headquarters and television studio that they launched were quietly shuttered last summer, and all Atlanta-based staffers had been laid off. The mobile app disappeared for over a year, and the, quote, full news site displays branded the North Star apparel for sale alongside relatively scant original journalism. So,
yeah.
like, basically looks like a domain squatter. Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
a real website.
You can get, like, those, like, it's just, like, ads for those weird-ass, like, autofill t-shirts where it's like, it's a North Star thing you wouldn't understand. Like,
yeah. Just, yeah, it's just like, yeah, there's very little there. It's a lot of like aggregated content from other places. Like they're not doing that much original journalism.
Just like a MySpace page in early 2009, just like a slum of online landscape.
Yeah, I mean, you can go to it. It's the northstar.com. It kind of looks like Vox or something, but it's just a lot of aggregated stuff. There's not a lot of like new.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like things were not going well. They had all of these plans. They wanted to do a daily news broadcast. They wanted to do podcasts. They wanted to do original journalism. Sean King was like, all this stuff is going to happen. That's what you're donating to. And then, like, none of it happened. So he says to the Daily Beast reporter, like, the Daily Beast reaches out for comment while they're putting this piece together. And Sean King says, when we launched the North Star, virtually every advisor I had insisted that we should not do written articles, podcasts, and video news at the same time. I just knew we could do it. They were right. So he's just like, look, it's so funny because it's like up until that point, you think he's going to tell you that he proved everyone wrong. Yeah, like he's everyone said not to, but I really believed we could do it. Anyway, we couldn't do it. We were wrong.
Yeah, man. Everybody is 99-0. You're not beating them, man. Like, just that's.
Yeah, like, or just like telling that story doesn't absolve you unless you actually did it.
Yeah,
like, that's, that doesn't help. That's just like,
exactly.
So you don't listen to people who know better than you.
Yeah.
Is what that means.
I had nothing but experts in my face saying, Sean, don't do this. It's a bad idea. I'd be like, well, they're experts for a reason. Anyways, guys, I'm out.
Yeah. And he kind of does this like over and over again where he's like, you know, I really believed we could do it. Turns out we can't.
Yeah.
Like, we'll get into some other quotes that he says about his other projects, but like, it's just like, so
he's,
like, come on, dude. Yeah. Like, you can't be in charge of stuff anymore.
He's just the little engine that probably shouldn't have tried.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I guess he's persistent. I guess that counts for something.
Yeah.
But
slow and steady doesn't win the race, but, you know, it's, yeah, man, definitely. <That's>, slow and steady. I agree.
He like, so he says like, you know, we tried to do this. He basically says like, we tried to do too much too soon. That's the problem. But the Daily Beast got a bunch of, former employees of the North Star to talk to them about what was going on.
Former employees never got nothing good to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Always talking shit. What do these former employees have to say?
Shockingly. Yeah. These former employees are like this, it's not a problem of overambition. He was like completely absent from this. He was like totally negligent. He would insist to be in complete control, but had no idea what he was doing and wouldn't listen to feedback. So it's like, great. Awesome.
Yeah.
What a wonderful boss.
Just, man, just like the three-way perfect thing. Like, you know, like once being total control is completely absent, has no idea what they're doing. Just, you know, just,
The trifecta.
Yeah. The trifecta of incompetence.
So like, they're really frustrated because it's like he hired me because I have a ton of experience in this realm.
Yeah.
And then he just ignored everything I said despite his lack of experience. So it's like, what was the point of this?
Yeah. Did you watch, Dexter as a kid? Dexter's Lab.
Not.
Oh man. He reminds me, there's a character named Mandark. And if you don't know, he's got, anybody out there who gets
I'm
what
sure
I'm saying?
Our listeners know.
Yeah, yeah. This dude reminds me of Mandark, like Dexter's arch nemesis, and just a pinheaded little guy. Anyways, but, anyways, carry on. Sorry.
So, as I said, this guy has done a lot of good. Like, the article says, it's well documented that King has used his social media platforms to garner national headlines for stories of racial injustice that would likely have otherwise been neglected or ignored. However, as those headlines have continued to raise his profile, he has continued to raise money, including through a Patreon fundraising campaign launched a few months ago to turn his podcast into a daily video news broadcast. Does this sound familiar? Because that was what he was raising money for with the North Star, and he never did it. And now he has another Patreon trying to raise money to do the same thing. So it's like, hey, man, we already gave you money to do this, and you didn't do it. You can't raise more money to do that.
And, and so the thing that's been consistent through all this is the podcast, right?
I don't even think that's consistent. I don't think he's been consistent about anything.
That's
I think he's like,
man, like I love just like somebody who has like a 6-year track record of just like threatening people to have releases somehow. Like, yo, if I get all this money, then I'm gonna make this thing, and it just consistently never happening. That's something else right there.
I mean, I think he does do a podcast, but he's like no, I want to do a daily video news thing. And it's like, well, you said you were going to do that and we gave you money and you didn't do it. Why do you need more money now?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So he's launched like this other Patreon, like a few months ago in April. This is April 2020. He launched his Patreon. And that sort of is what brought all of these accusations about his like incompetence back into the discourse again.
Yeah.
Because like this has been coming up, as we'll see from his previous projects, like people have been talking about how he can't follow through on anything for years. And the thing that is like very frustrating is that he is kind of a darling of like white progressives, like famous people,
yeah,
like Sigourney Weaver and Bernie Sanders and people who don't like do grassroots, like on the ground, like Black Lives Matter stuff. And so like all of these activists in this community are saying like, this guy shouldn't be in charge of things, but because he has this profile, he keeps getting sort of plucked out to like be a surrogate for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Like if Bernie Sanders had more black people on his staff, like that probably wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 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 He's being allowed to continue like failing essentially just cause he's favored by the white progressive left. Yeah. That's that's a situation. Cause like, they're largely going to probably be insulated from any criticism whatsoever. It's not going to reach their ears, you know, like, and so,
right.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, it's weird. It's almost like he has like it, with the blood test lady. What was that thing again? Anyways, how she kept her Elizabeth, whatever, how she kept her, her company, like completely separated and like, you know, over here from each other. Like, it's kind of funny that he can keep like almost two spheres of influence completely separate of each other.
Right.
Like, in what should be a public discourse where the information is right there to see. It's like these people aren't looking at it and he's able to just keep walking back over to that side after every failure and just getting more traction and funding. That's wild.
Yeah, it's like the people who give him the money, like the rich people, don't ever really check up on the results because the results don't really affect them.
The results are they wanted to be seen giving that guy money.
Right.
Yeah. They're like, check, we did that and we're out, you know?
So, like, him trying to raise money on Patreon again brought up all of these, like, previous sort of issues and accusations about him. The main one is that he has inflated, mismanaged, and failed to account for funds he's raised for various social justice causes. And there was a hashtag
to which he responded, "Hey."
The hashtag that people use for this is hashtag Sean King let me down, which is like, damn, indicting.
Just right in the heart.
Harsh, yeah. But yeah, so there's like Sean King let me down, hashtag Sean King let me down goes through like a lot of his
like a blues lyric. Sean King done let me down.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I feel like these people have the blues. He's fucked them all over.
Yeah, no, I get it.
So I want to go over like some of the things in the Sean King let me down hashtag. There are many, but these are some of the ones that I thought were kind of funny. The first one is from 2011, which, so we're going to go through sort of his timeline. So I'll give you like sort of the basic timeline and then we can go through and sort of fill it out. So after he graduates from Morehouse, he becomes a pastor for a while. We'll talk about his church in a little bit. Then he becomes kind of like a life coach guy. And then he sort of becomes more directly involved in like fundraising and stuff.
Yeah.
And so the beginning of him being involved in fundraising after he's done the life coach thing and the pastor thing is that, he starts this, website, which has now been taken down, but you can find it on the web archive, called Seven Mountains, Seven Continents, Seven Great Causes, One Broken Man.
Oh, and
so apparently the idea was that he's had like a lot of like back problems, I guess. I guess that's why he's a broken man. It sounds like he's trying to get his kids back or something, though, right?
Yeah, like he's like, what's his face? The R&B singer, the white R&B singer, dude. God damn it. The dude,
white R&B singer, dude.
Robin Thicke. Like, he's, that's also the Robin Thicke album and shit.
He's like Robin Thicke. Yeah. He's trying to get his wife back.
Trying to get a little girl back. Exactly. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently it's because he's had like back surgeries or whatever. And he's like, I'm going to climb mountains for charity. That's what I'm going to do. And he's trying to raise money for a water purification system in Haiti, which like, poor Haiti, man. Yeah. Like, so many people have fucked over Haiti in the name of like pretending to be philanthropists. So awful.
I don't know much about it, but I know like I read an article about Wyclef Jean, like his ventures into like Haiti fundraising were just like pretty epically misspent and mismanaged. But yeah,
it's just like very for some reason, like people love to do crooked, like philanthropy schemes in Haiti. I mean, the Red Cross like fucked them over. Like, everybody fucked Haiti over, including Sean King, because his whole plan was to climb these mountains on each of the tallest mountain on each of the seven continents.
But that is just like a simpleton's version of like a thing to do. It's like, I'm gonna climb the highest mountain in every. I don't know. It's just, that's like, that's so uncreative, and then just I hate it already.
Well, if you hate it, maybe it will make you happy to know that he abandoned this quest 4 days into training.
Yeah, of course.
So he's done.
Of course he did.
Right away, like, he raised all this money, and then he did 4 days of mountain climbing training and was like, fuck this. I'm not doing this.
In his defense, he said it right there. He said, I'm a broken man. And like, you give him all this money, and he's like, yeah, no, I'm weak. I can't do this.
Another interesting thing about this website where he's soliciting donations for this, you know, this mountain climbing expedition, he has a little bio about himself. And this is him in 2011. He calls himself a serial entrepreneur, which is like, that's like menacing.
Yeah. Everywhere I go, I'm trying to start some shit up. You can't even.
Yeah.
It also, Serial just definitely opens things. So what's happened to all of them that you've done? Be like, well, that's I'm doing a lot of them. They're not necessarily all succeeding.
Yeah. I think you said the last time we did it, it's like, so does he have like a signature that the cops know?
Yeah, his calling card. Like, like, this guy gouged all the prices.
Yep. Yeah, this startup bears all the signs.
Yeah.
He's been here. Yeah, a serial entrepreneur. I just thought that was very funny. Yeah. It says he's launched a dozen different successful startups, which is like, define successful, define startup, define launch. Yeah. Like,
name one. Who the fuck said that?
Yeah, so I just thought that one was very funny. I said before the mountain climbing, he was the minister of a church in Atlanta, and I this story is interesting to me because I feel like it is like a very good origin story for him.
It is perfect.
Like, this started in 2008. He filmed this video talking about how he had this dream to build a church in this neighborhood in Atlanta, and he's 29 at the time, so he's like, you know, post college but pretty young. And he like delivers this very impassioned speech on this video about how he is soliciting funds for a church. And like, this really speaks to like what he's good at. He's really good at this article with the church stuff comes from BuzzFeed. It says he often filmed himself making appeals to his vast network of monetary support for various projects. Again, I think going to Morehouse and living in Atlanta, he is like a charismatic guy, so I think he had a lot of really good connections. I think that is,
yeah,
like with people like this, it's like the problem isn't, I don't think that Sean King doesn't believe in what he says he believes in. I think he believes in the cause of social justice and civil rights. I think he doesn't understand his strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit of an opportunist, but I don't think he's not genuine. And I think, like, if he were genuine, he would realize the thing I'm good at is talking to rich people and getting their money.
Yeah.
And then giving it to people who know what to do with it, which I am not.
Yeah. It's the same thing with the lady with the hospital in Uganda. It's just like, you don't have to be the superhero star of this. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes the best thing you can do for the movement is just to quietly do your part. And his part isn't even necessarily quiet. He can still get tons of time out in the spotlight. You know what I'm saying? Like, he can be the face of the things. It's like, you just don't have to be the brains or like the logistics behind it, because you're clearly not good at that.
And yeah, like, just when you hire people who have the background in this, like, step back, because you're good at being the face. That's what you're good at. But yeah, so he's like, puts out this video to his connections in Atlanta, and he finds himself, he connects with this group called the Association of Related Churches, which is an organization that works with pastors to start new churches in this sort of federation. So
sounds super chill and totally cool.
Yeah. Very, very legit.
Yeah.
And I feel like this also makes them seem shady, is they were opening 50 new churches a year, which is a lot.
Yeah.
but they loved Sean King. They loved him. He was celebrated for his ability to rally people around causes using technology, and he used that leverage to tell the ARC's leadership it was too white. He was something of a golden boy, so they listened. And King delivered with something no church planner can deny: numbers. With King, the organization had its largest church grand opening ever. On average, ARC's churches host about 250 people. When King opened his church, more than 600 people showed up to hear him speak at Courageous Church's first service in 2009.
Man.
So, yeah. So they're like, we love this guy.
Yeah.
He's great. He keeps leading that church for like 2 years, this Courageous Church. He never does end up moving to the neighborhood, the Bluff, that he wanted to in that video, but his church is like doing pretty well.
The professional aspect, like the career aspect, like behind churches, is a pretty bizarre world. it's always a funny place to be. Like, I got a lot of friends, moms, who pastors, or you can just get jobs at different churches. It's weird. It's like a whole other industry where you can like apply for new positions and stuff. I mean, obviously anything would be like that, but it just shocks you. Like, oh yeah, that's like that too.
The church industry.
Yeah.
It's definitely a thing.
I was in line one time, and I heard a dude, this guy on the phone, and he was talking to like presumably his boss, and I could tell he worked at a church, and they were debating their pay. And they were like having a conversation. He's like, see, I just felt like God is telling me that I need to make more in this position. And like, he would just wait for a little bit. And I can only imagine the other guy was like, see, well, because God is telling me, I think that I haven't budgeted correctly as it is. that felt like what was going on. I was like, that is bizarre.
That is a wild way to negotiate your salary.
You just gotta bring God in. Like, and each one of y'all could just lie and say what you think God is saying. That's just such a weird level of complication.
So, yeah, like, he's really good at the sort of entrepreneurial aspect of running a church. But he then, like, again, like with everything else, he had like a very specific vision for how he wanted it to go, and it ended up alienating most of the members. He wanted to focus less on Sunday services and do more mission-oriented work, which is kind of what he ends up doing, like, you know, more social justice-oriented stuff as opposed to like Sunday worship.
Yeah.
But that wasn't what the church wanted, and he kept doing it anyway.
Yeah.
And they ended up pushing him out, and then the church closed like immediately after.
Oh,
so
it's due to like lack of funding because like of him not being there.
I think because of that, and also just because of like disinterest. Like, he had already kind of run it into the ground.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
he wasn't
yeah.
really he had kind of undermined the community element of this church.
Yeah,
so, like, it wasn't gonna go on without him.
Sean, we're just looking for a place to have lunch once a week, you know, they can have a barbecue, maybe do something on the holidays. We are not trying to do any of this other stuff.
Yeah. So it really didn't work. And then he and his family kind of like moved away. So the BuzzFeed article says Courageous Church was the first of King's failures as a public leader and activist. Midtown Atlanta didn't have a lot of churches. It attempted to reach people other churches ignored or saw as unchurched in a different, refreshing way. But King demanded a shift. The move proved unpopular. Church planners quietly questioned King's commitment to preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ as King and his family left Courageous Church with little explanation. So they just kind of like peaced out. And he, when interviewed about this, again, he just has the weirdest way of talking about it. He says, I'm deeply uncomfortable and bothered by every failure I've ever had. I hate failure. When I seek out to start something, I aim to succeed. But I'm always willing to try stuff that I know may very well fail. Our goal with Courageous Church was to do something we hadn't seen done before. So he's always like, well, you know, I shoot for the moon. Like, I try to do things in these unusual ways where, like, if they fail, they're going to fail. And it's like, well, sometimes things have been done the way they've been done because they work. Like,
yeah.
You don't always have to do something no one's ever done before.
Yeah, right. Guys, I know you guys are really going crazy over this wheel, and I like it. But I've got a whole new idea for the wheel. I'm going to totally reinvent this thing. It's right. Like, no, Sean, there's no need.
And then when his wheel sucks, he's like, well, you know, if it was going to work, it was going to really work.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
99 times out of 100, it wasn't going to work. So.
I guess I got to get back to that drawing board and think of some other kind of wheel, I guess. You know.
And it's like, that's fine if it's your wheel. But if you went around to all your neighbors and asked them for money so you could build a wheel prototype, like, that's not the way to do it. Like,
we've got it. That's what he's doing. He's a door-to-door wheel fund set the collection.
Well, that brings us, so I'm going to talk about one more sort of pursuit before I go back to the North Star stuff, which is his sort of foray into life coaching.
He hits every mark, man. He's got the church, the social justice, the life coach. He's like hitting all the marks, man.
Yeah, really, like every kind of exploitative thing where it's like, and again, like, I think he wants to help people, but it's like, how can I help people with maximum benefit to myself?
Yeah.
Well, church, life coaching, and social media attention.
Yeah.
Great.
Life coaching thing is insane. I fell into, I just heard about the guy, I fell into a Gary Vaynerchuk rabbit hole not that long ago.
Oh, wow.
That dude, that guy's psychotic. You know? I love how he just cusses, and that's like half his brand. He's just like, yo, dude, I'll drop an F-bomb while talking about some stocks. All right, watch out.
Yeah, that's how you know he's telling you the truth.
Yeah.
So, Sean King's life coaching foray, I found some stuff from 2015 on his Facebook about this. It was called Life Goals University. it was an online class. So the post that I found said, hello, my friends. Life Goals University, the online class where I teach you how to set and achieve 100 life goals, is now open. Only taking the first 100 students so that I can help guide each of you step by step. So he's like, limited spots. Yeah. Like, it's very like multi-level marketing.
Yeah. It's nothing new. He's just doing all like the same old notes.
Yeah. I also found an old Kickstarter page for a book that I think he did end up writing. He was going to write a book about how to accomplish 100 life goals. And he did write this book, but it ended up having a different name. It is called...
How to Accomplish 73 Life Goals. That's like all he got to.
He definitely kept the same amount of goals. He just changed the name. Yeah, so the name is The Power of 100. That's what it's called.
And
it's
about... Okay.
Yeah, no, you'd think he would pare it back considering he has failed to achieve, like, any of his goals.
Yeah, yeah, man. I just want to read the Sean King secrets of attaining one life goal.
Right. And it says, like, on the front of the book, it says, by Sean King, founder of Life Goals University. Like, his online class. Like, it's very,
my cousin,
very scammy.
My cousin went to Life Goals.
Yeah. Oh, shit. I have a diploma for
you. Yeah.
I learned how to do HVAC at Life Goals University.
I'm a paralegal because of Life Goals University.
So... this was from like 2015. The Kickstarter for the book says, no direction slash momentum in life, too busy or broke to pursue your passions, already given up on your biggest dreams, this is for you. So
yeah. Hurt to look in the mirror, this is for you.
Yeah, just like really insulting you before he tells you it's for you.
Yeah.
So he folds this life goals stuff, like he kind of moves on, and this is sort of when he gets into the social justice stuff. Like, this is again like post Ferguson, where he sort of found a lot of his initial social media fame. He founded a PAC called Justice Together, which is an anti-police brutality group. But he like very quickly just sort of pulled the plug on it. Like, he founded this group in the wake of Ferguson, like after doing all this life coach stuff, he kind of pivoted. But the Justice Together group, like the people who are actually working in this organization, were completely like blindsided by the fact that he was shutting it down.
Yeah.
So they ended up posting an open letter. You can read it still on Medium, about how like Sean King was basically totally negligent in organizing and communicating with them. He was supposed to be like the head of this group, and these people are basically like, look, we worked really, really hard, trying to like achieve our aims, and Sean King was more of an obstacle than he was a help. He'd made a bunch of executive decisions to like erase all of our hard work. He closed all our state chapters without like informing us of what was happening. They were really, really pissed. And then after they, like, this was sort of when stuff started coming out in social justice circles about him being sort of shady.
Yeah.
And so like after Justice Together wrote this piece, another group that he was involved with, JTA, which I can't find what it stands for, but it was another like similar sort of police brutality watchdog group.
Justice he was involved to with, all.
Something like that. they basically were like, all of this stuff is true. This happened with us too. Like, this is the same pattern that we have experienced with him.
It's like when exes start texting.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like when exes connect with each other.
Yeah, yeah. Just find out what kind of asshole you really are.
They were pretty like nice about it.
Yeah.
They said, the final paragraph of it is, we applaud King's writing and activism, which have been a force for change and have amplified the message that Black Lives Matter. However, given the power and balance between those like King with a national media platform versus those of us who work quietly in the background, we must clearly and forthrightly call influential leaders to account when that power and balance is used to elevate an individual voice at the expense of the larger movement. Which is like a very diplomatic way to say, like, this guy's full of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, very fair criticism. So it kind of gets back. It's just like, it's like, you're good at what you do, but please stay in your lane.
Right. Like, you should not have authority over these groups.
Yeah.
So this is kind of when all of this stuff starts coming out. After this comes out, there's yet another hashtag, which at the time in 2015 was hashtag sit down Sean, which is pretty funny.
Have a seat. Have a seat, bro.
Like, that's when people start putting the pieces together that he's had all of these sort of failed or abruptly shuttered projects in his wake, but all of them have raised a lot of money, which was then not really accounted for.
Yeah.
One of these open letters says, in the past 4 years, King has launched several efforts, all of which failed or faded away without explanation. Each of these efforts had substantial monetary investment from both community donors with questions, from both community and donors with questions that remain unanswered to this day. So, like, real shady. We don't know where the money is. King eventually responded to these allegations by putting together a 72-page financial report compiled by a, quote, expert review panel. However, the people on this panel were all people who were, like, friends of his and people with business interests with his. So,
This is my expert review panel. This is my friends. We all came here together in the same car.
We drove here together. Yeah.
He just daps up everybody on the fucking on the review panel. Just, what's up? Just leans in.
Gives everybody a hug.
Yeah. Asking about kids and shit. Like, you guys doing good? You guys good? All right.
So he sets up this panel to basically exonerate him and say that he hasn't been stealing money or anything. but he also says that this panel has found that he raised $34.5 million for various civil rights and Black Lives Matter causes, which is like a huge embellishment. Because most of that money was based on one fundraiser from 2018 for the group Races, R-A-I-C-E-S.
Yeah.
They're like an immigrant advocacy group. He didn't even start that fundraiser. Other people started it, and he just like boosted it and was like, this is mine now. I'm taking credit for this.
So, I mean, he was on brand, you know, like shit.
Yeah, very on brand. So the people who started it, it was a couple named Charlotte and Dave Wilner. And Charlotte, when interviewed, said, "We had 22 volunteers in our living room at one point. Sean was not one of them. Any one person taking credit for this is antithetical to what we were trying to do." So, like, didn't even really help, just boosted stuff on his Facebook page and his Twitter and was like, I raised this money now.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, like, there's, like, so much, like, shitty comedy behavior and all this too, you know, just kind of
totally
attaching yourself to things, lying about credits.
If Sean King were a comedian, he would absolutely be saying he was on Last Comic Standing because he was on the wacky audition.
Yeah. Hell yeah, that's a spot on.
So there's like, that is one thing. So he's like taking credit for money he didn't raise, but then also the money he did raise, there's still missing money. So like, his auditor said that when he shuttered that group Justice Together, the people that wrote the open letter, they said he refunded 100% of the donations, but Daily Beast found at least one example where that was not true, which was that he received a grant from this organization, the Proteus Fund, who, like, they gave $17,500 to Justice Together. And they said King never returned the money. They also said, like, when you get a grant like that, you have to write a report back to the people funding it to tell them how you used it.
Yeah.
And he just never did it.
Yeah,
so,
man. Yeah, 17, like, it sounds like he was pulling in a lot of money. And 17.5, that's just feel like you're just... That's gonna get sucked up in that whirlwind that is his fundraising. And like, yeah, if you think you're gonna find that 17.5 again, I don't know, wrong answer. Like, that dude's
good luck.
That's a perfect amount of money for him to skate with.
There's also like other stuff that's missing. Like, there was this guy who was on the board.
I let a dude borrow a shirt one night. I haven't seen that back.
There was this guy who was on the board of Justice Together before he realized that it was full of shit, and he gave $10,000 that was never refunded. They interviewed him for this Daily Beast article. His name is David Hansen, and he said that the Justice Together board, quote, had no resemblance to any legitimate board in terms of responsibilities and oversight. So, like, not great. Not great.
Yeah, somebody stole 10 grand from me, I would build an entire separate speaking career going around talking about how they owed me 10 grand. I would speak at corporate engagements and graduations and just be like, guys, Sean.
That would be my new career.
Yeah. I want you students in your class of 2023 to attack life the way I am attacking Sean King, who, by the way, owes me $10,000. I mean, come on. It's a huge fucking applause break.
Seriously, like, I just can't. Yeah, I will never have that much money where that is not like, that just doesn't completely ruin my life that somebody absconds with $10,000.
I'd like that Howard Dean tape, like, where, you know, we're going to Michigan, we're gonna go to Montana, he owes me $10,000. I'm just like, man, it would be so tight.
So there's other stuff too, like, he says Sean King said that he's like, the only salary I draw from any of my fundraising is that I take a $4,166 monthly salary from my PAC, Real Justice PAC. They pay me. Everything else is like speaking engagements, yeah. book sales. That's it.
That's just walking around money, baby. That's just daytime money. That's all that is.
Yeah, that's just what's on the books, because it's clearly not true. Because Daily Beast looked into some IRS filings. Another thing that King started, he started a crowdfunding website called Hope Mob, which already sounds shady to me, that name.
Hope Mob, just threateningly hopeful.
Yeah, I don't understand. But apparently that was one of his things, was this crowdfunding site, Hope Mob. Apparently, the IRS filings for Hope Mob in 2012 showed that he was paid $160,000 a year for 2013. For tax year 2013. He was CEO of the organization. So,
well, that sounds like some shit you'd see on like a Facebook page from your hometown. Like,
CEO of Hope Mob? CEO absolutely. Of Hope Mob. It's such a, yeah, like shady acquaintance from high school.
CEO, it's like CEO of Hope Mob would like to send you a message. You're like, ah, oh, man, yep. what's all this about?
So the other thing too is like, this is supposed to be a crowdfunding website. So he was making $160,000 a year running this. That's 40% of the funds that crowdfunding site raised.
Oh,
so like,
good Lord.
Like 40 cents out of every dollar you put toward a cause is just going right into Sean King's pocket.
Yeah.
Just super shady.
Oh man. What? Yeah. That's insanity. 160 grand off of Hope Mob.
Another thing that like, I just think is so fucking funny is, so like when he published this financial report that he had this like panel of people complete, he took out paid ads on Facebook about it. Like, being like, look, Sean King, not a criminal. Like, check it out.
Hell yeah. Yeah, it's like, would you like to boost this post? Yes, yes, I would.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did.
Sean
he, like,
King
promoted
is not
the post.
A crook. He just shares it from his Facebook page. Like, hey, this is crazy. A lot of people are talking about how I'm not a crook. This is weird.
This is wild stuff. So, like, he took out ads for this, and DeRay McKesson, who's, like, another personality that sort of emerged at the beginning of the Black Lives Movement, he's the guy with the blue vest.
Yes.
He like, pretty early on sort of called out King for being shady and was like, I don't have anything to do with this guy. Like, he's not accountable. I have other issues with DeRay McKesson, but, like, he was dead on about Sean King.
Yeah.
So when he took out these ads on Facebook, DeRay was like, this guy used money from his PAC to take out these ads. Like, this is money that's supposed to be going to electing prosecutors who support Black Lives Matter, and instead you're using it to pay for self-promotion. And King denied it.
He was like, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't do that. So
King was just like, no, I didn't do it. But, like, there's like documented evidence that he did. He spent $1,300 of this PAC money. So he cheated to be like, to promote this thing saying he doesn't cheat.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
What it's like, it's $1,300, dude. Just do that.
Yeah.
On the
yeah.
Like one thing, do one thing. Right. Yeah. Come on, man.
I didn't do that. Like, this is like right there. You're like, yeah, you did.
That. Yeah. Like, you just straight up lied, and it was easy to check. Why did you do that?
Yeah.
So there's that. There's like, he, when all this stuff was coming up, he tried to sue some people who were talking critically about him. He tried to sue these two like young Black queer activists who were basically saying not to trust him. And, you know, he has like way more money and power than
he did. Yeah, yeah.
And, like, thankfully he backed off once people were like, what the fuck? But, like, that's the kind of dude this guy is. Like,
yeah, yeah. Are you saying don't trust me? Well, I have a lawsuit for you. It's insane.
Yeah. He also, like, he misidentified the killer of the 7-year-old girl. Like, he was, because that's what he does on Twitter and stuff. He like promotes social justice and civil rights stuff. And there was this, seven-year-old black girl named Jasmine Barnes, who was sadly murdered in a drive-by shooting. And it seemed for a time that it may have been a hate crime.
Yeah.
And Sean King wrongly identified the murderer. Like, the guy's life got ruined. Like,
yeah, yeah.
The guy's, they death threats, his whole family was, like, completely harassed and ostracized because of this. Sean King never apologized, and the guy who he wrongly accused ended up killing himself.
Oh, so, like, shit.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
To be fair, like, the guy who he accused when he killed himself, he was in jail on unrelated charges, so, like, He had stuff going on in his life, like, yeah, other yeah, than yeah. Sean King. But, like, Sean has never apologized for that. Like, that's so shady to me that he did that.
And yeah.
It's really frustrating to me as a Bernie Sanders supporter that the Sanders team, like, adopted him as a surrogate. Because, like, all this stuff was known about him before 2020. Like, you should not have been working with
him. Yeah, that's, yeah. You know? Yeah, that's, yeah, and again, he just keep, it's, like, almost like the people who keep employing him are insulated from that criticism. Like, they're not going to, they're not going to hear it simply because they don't want to. Like, they're not listening to the other side. And so they don't hear this, you know, very public criticism of a person they keep on employing.
Yeah. Like, they don't live in the neighborhood where Jasmine Barnes was killed in Houston.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's not, they don't know about this stuff. Yeah. So, like, and the Daily Beast article makes a point of saying that here. They say the controversies surrounding King have done little to diminish his status among high-profile admirers. Last year, he was honored with an award at Rihanna's Diamond Ball. At Sanders' 2020 presidential campaign kickoff event in Brooklyn, King delivered the keynote. And his most recent book, Make Change, features a foreword by Bernie Sanders, as well as glowing blurbs from Representative Rashida Tlaib, music mogul Sean Diddy Combs. That's how they, I would have just said Diddy, but okay, Daily Beast. And this is the weirdest one. And soccer star Megan Rapinoe. Like, all right, yeah, I guess. Yeah, yeah. She's just like a white lady that plays soccer.
Just
but...
global power hitters, you know? movers and shakers on a, you know, on a truly nationwide scale. So.
Yeah, so, like, it seems like very little can kind of stop him from getting these unlimited chances to fuck things up, basically.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened with the North Star. So, yeah. Like, this episode's getting long, so I won't go into all of the issues with the North Star. But basically, like, yeah, he had all of these ideas for how to do things, and people were like, that's not realistic, that's not feasible, and he wouldn't listen. He just, like, wouldn't take notes. He, like, barely visited the Atlanta studio. He was, like, up in New York, but he still insisted on having, like, final say in everything. I feel like this story really, it's just, like, one example, but I feel like it kind of explains the situation that was happening there. So there was, like, a technical error with their, like, billing, where they accidentally undercharged people. It was, like, some kind of... Sorry, let me find it. Okay. Let me start over. 3, 2, 1. So there was, like, a technical error that ended up undercharging people for their subscriptions. This was, like, a few months after it launched. And that's obviously, like, a big problem because there's a bunch of money owed that they need to keep running. But you can't just charge people's cards after they've already been charged. Like, you need to get in touch with them and everything.
Yeah.
So, like, this is an issue. There's also issues with, like, they didn't have a terms and conditions form, which is, like, illegal as far as trying to collect money from people on a subscription basis with a credit card. But anyway, they have this undercharging problem. Sean had to figure out how to collect the money owed. Just after 4 p.m. on the Friday before Memorial Weekend 2019, against the advice of his staff and without their knowledge, King sent a mass email from the support staff account informing members that they would be charged, according to one former employee. Among the recipients were roughly 1,000 people who had already canceled their North Star memberships. When angry complaints broadsided support staffers on their way out the door for the long weekend, the employee pleaded with King to send an email countering the first letter and promising that support staff would be in touch with members to get permission first. So again, 4 p.m. right before Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Awful, like so awful. And then it gets even worse because King, like they all told him not to do this and he did it. And then once he realizes that everyone is pissed off, he sends an apologetic follow-up email from his personal email address, writing, "Our team just sent out the below email about our brand new payment processing system, but I wanted to write to you to let you know that I've asked the team to hold off on any charges for missed payments until we confirm that you directly approve the missed charge." So, like, he just completely throws them all under the bus. He I'm sorry. I asked them to stop.
These guys, can you believe these guys? They got animals back here wanting to just, and I was the voice of reason. I was like, guys, hey, we need to get permission from these people. That's insane.
And then the lovely button on this story is that less than a week later, without any warning, King just charged all the accounts.
Hey.
So, like, he didn't even do it. Just total asshole.
Oh, man. That's great.
And that's apparently the point where, like, even his defenders at the company were like, this guy is not trustworthy. they had a bunch of false promises to both employees and subscribers about, like, what was going on and, like, when things were going to launch. They went through, like, multiple news anchors for this news broadcast that never happened. And, like, everybody involved was just like, it was a pain in the ass. Like, his notes for us were really shitty. There were problems with getting people health insurance. Like, he promised that everybody would be covered and then people would, like, be advocating for it and then get fired. Like, all of this.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Like, just really mistreating everybody, both outside and inside the company.
What are you doing, Sean? Like, Sean, you let me down.
Yeah. Hashtag Sean King let me down. At this point, like, they've gone through all of this drama. He ended up firing a bunch of people. At this point in time, the company now employs only 14 people. One of the employees appears to be King's wife, whom the North Star site at different times has variously identified as the company's chief operating officer and its operations manager. There's this former editor-in-chief at the North Star, is this woman named Keisha Blaine. Former employees say that she was, like, King's biggest ally in the company. Like, she would defend him all the time.
Yeah.
She said, this is her quote, like, with her name on it, on a tweet thread after this whole thing. "Sean and the word accountability should never be in the same sentence." Which we love, because you failed at that. Already put Sean and Nora accountability in the same sentence.
So
fine.
Send me to jail, because I just broke my own law.
But she says, "So many people warned me about him and I didn't listen. I learned through the experience, not rumors or innuendos, but real life experience with a liar and a fraud." She's fucking pissed.
She's like, "I didn't listen." You could almost say that me and the word listen should never be in the same sentence, you know? Because I certainly wasn't.
So, they, like, another thing that was really shady about this was, like, at the beginning of the pandemic, King sent out another fundraising announcement that he said, yeah, of course he did. He said, quote, "We have not had to let a single employee go or even reduce their hours," which, like, he's implying, like, since the pandemic, like, they're keeping everybody on. And he says in the email to potential donors that their donations will, quote, "allow us to keep our staff and even hire new staff that have been fired from other companies over this past month." Now, of course, this is after he's fired the majority of his staff. He's saying, like, "Oh no, we haven't fired anyone. Like, we're able to keep everybody on."
I haven't fired anybody since the last time I fired anybody.
Exactly. Like, one of the editors says he's gone through three different teams in a single year, and I can guarantee you that not a single person who worked for him at the North Star has a positive thing to say about him as a leader, activist, or businessman. Now he's fundraising yet again for something he promised to deliver years ago. Sean is really just funding his ego at this point. So, he starts a quote COVID-19 help squad in mid-March, like trying to capitalize off this pandemic thing again.
How did that go? Did they do good? I hope they did good.
Yeah, no, they did so much good. He's saying, look, the COVID-19 help squad has not directly solicited donations, which is a sentence that people on the Up and Up say. Look, we didn't directly ask for donations.
I threw my cup some change went in my cup, bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah, we just, we put in our action-packed newsletter that our goal was to raise $28,000 in the next 5 days, partly to aid people in need due to COVID-19. But we didn't directly ask for donations.
Yeah. Come on. So, do you think I would do that?
So, yeah, like, basically, moral of the story, he's still scamming. He's now using the pandemic to scam. And the whole thing is really sad because, like we said, it's like this, the stuff that he's claiming to be a part of is like really important stuff. Like, this is the final paragraph in the Daily Beast article, and I think it's like really important. A previous employee says, you're naming something after Frederick Douglass's The North Star. That's the pinnacle. There's something so insidious about just taking the legacy of movement journalism. When we really look back at Ida B. Wells, at Frederick Douglass, the Chicago Defender, the Amsterdam News, we have so much history and excellence in this lane, and we're so lacking in political discourse and commentary through this particular progressive lens that is centered around blackness. And this was such a missed opportunity. And that's really the thing that's like most frustrating about this is like he's like one of the most prominent like black leftist voices,
yeah,
and he has squandered all of that. And yeah, there are all of these people who are like really good, capable, competent, smart, insightful people who he's sort of corralled into these projects and then just completely burned out and mismanaged. And those people don't have as much access to money and celebrity and platform as him, and they're just all kind of left out in the wind, you
yeah
know?
And you gotta like, you also take consideration like what whatever wave of goodwill he's riding right now, you gotta think like worst case scenario, what if like what if this level of attention isn't paid to like, or this is like the one chance you get kind of where this many people are paying attention, this many people are willing to give. It would be very fortuitous for everybody if a person in charge would learn to stay in his lane and let people who are competent take over and just stick to his fun skill, which is fundraising,
Right. I mean, like, and even like this idea is a good idea. I mean, yeah, like the idea of we should do something like the North Star is like a really cool, empowering, like, I think people are ready for that. Like, yeah. I don't even think that he has like ill-fated ideas. He just can't execute.
Yeah, exactly.
And at some point, it's like, it's not a matter of, like, maybe it's not willful, but like, if you know your own track record of failure and you care about this stuff, you can't in good conscience be like, yeah, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Like, and again, like, I just want to reiterate, like, the North Star, it is technically still a website, but like, the only stuff on it is there's two podcasts that are both Sean King, and its four most read articles were all published over a year ago. Like, yeah, they're not really doing original journalism. It's just kind of sitting there, and it's just such a wasted opportunity. It's a real bummer, and it's a bummer that, like, a lot of people, like, we were talking about how this guy gets criticized from the right, and how a lot of people will look at this guy as a fraud and think, well, Black Lives Matter is just full of opportunists and frauds.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. He's definitely, like, because I know when I hear, like, when I'm in, like, online or whatever, I hear criticisms coming from the right, like, his name is brought up all the time and thrown in just, yeah, as a punching bag for them. And, I'm not saying that they're 100% right about that, but, like, yeah, he doesn't, it's almost like he is, with whatever dings he takes to his name and public persona, like, those are also being transmitted to a movement that he is the face of, and he's, like, not really taking that in consideration, it seems like.
Right, like, he's in attaching himself to this movement to bolster his legitimacy, he is delegitimizing that movement.
Yeah.
And that, like, if you claim to care about this stuff, you can't, like, let that happen.
Yeah.
Like, that's
yeah,
not...
Yeah.
You're, let me see if I can find this quote from him. One second.
You're a cancer, McNulty. Everything you touch turns to... I'm watching a lot of The Wire lately, sorry.
Okay, yeah. This is a quote that I think is, like, really sums up his perspective on what this is. And this is, I think, just such an entitled way to look at it. He says, "Part of what I've always tried to do is to do something in a way that has a high probability of failure with the hope that if it works, it might really work. But if it fails, it might be a royal failure." Like, you can't, like, do that on your own time. Like, try to build a time machine or something. Like, that's what that mentality is for. You can't have that mentality when it comes to getting black people's civil rights.
Yeah,
like,
Where if it fails royally. Like, yeah, that's right. That's not the outlook you want to have. Yeah. Man, that's
That is the story of Sean King. This article in the Daily Beast is really long, and it goes into a lot more detail about, like, what exactly happened with the North Star and exactly how he kind of ran it into the ground. So if you're interested in that, definitely check out that article. But yeah, basically, just don't give this guy money.
Yeah, don't do it. Yeah, it's nothing good's gonna come of that. Oh man, well, thank you very much, Kath, for doing that for us again. We are, you know, so yeah, and thanks guys for having your patience. I know people, we put that one out there and people were looking forward to it, and so that was all on your boy over here. So it looks like this one's locked in. We should be good to go. You guys, this is for the Scam Gang, so you guys paid the cover, so we got nothing to say to you. Worth it? No, I would argue this, but maybe
no, because I think you're causing too much suffering with your, and you're not, like, making enough money, you know? if he'd stuck in the, like, mega church lane and made, like, millions and millions of dollars off of those people, I might be tempted to say worth it, but I feel like civil rights is too important to me, so I'm going to say no.
What's at stake, with what he's risking, yeah, definitely not worth it. So, guys, if you're thinking of doing anything like this, don't do it, okay? there. Problem solved. But guys, so that's what's up. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm going to say, not worth it. My bad. Sorry, we haven't done a paid episode in a minute. I forgot how to end them out. Yeah, guys, thanks for stopping by. Thanks for listening. We will see you out online, and just be safe and don't get caught.
Don't get caught. Wear a mask.
Yes, please. Bye.
Bye.